Suit yourselves.
And Dram's hollow image disappeared like a popping soap bubble. The steel stairs shuddered as a large body of armed men came crashing up them. Owen fired his disruptor down the stairwell, but the energy beam ricocheted away from an advancing force shield wall. The espers concentrated, and boiling flames filled the stairwell. The force wall just kept coming, pushing back the flames, which were already beginning to die out as the esp blocker drew nearer. The Stevie Blues looked at Owen and Hazel.
Don't look at me. I'm right out of ideas. How much longer does the program have to run, Owen?
Can't be long now. A few minutes at most. But we can't afford to be cornered in the computer room with it.
And we don't have a few minutes anyway. How about setting up a barricade?
Couldn't hurt. See, you can come up with ideas when you have to. Stevies, if you'd care to lend a hand. They dashed back into the computer room, grabbed everything blocky that wasn't actually welded in place, and manhandled it out into the corridor. Between them, they maneuvered the heavy equipment over to the top of the stairwell and launched it down the stairs. The way was immediately blocked, and the enemy advance came to a sudden halt. Force shields were excellent at stopping energy blasts or bullets, but they had real problems coping with 300 pounds of assorted wedged office equipment. The security guard stopped to discuss the matter, while Dram snarled at them acidly from below. Owen and Hazel grinned at each other, and at the Esper clones, and then they all spun around at an unexpected sound behind them. It was the bell that signaled the approach of the elevator.
That shouldn't be possible. The cyber rats were supposed to have cut off the elevators. Never trust anyone who has an unnatural relationship with his soft drive.
Right.
They all spread out before the elevator door, guns and blades at the ready. It was very quiet in the corridor. Owen's hands were sweaty, and he wished he had time to dry them. The elevator chimed again, and the door slid open to reveal a medium-height, impeccably dressed man with a heavily lined face and long, carefully styled white hair. He smiled at them all engagingly, and the Stevie Blues let out their breath and lowered their weapons.
We should have known. If anyone could slip past an entire army of guards and just waltz in here, it would have to be you.
You know how it is. I do so love to make an entrance. Now be a dear and introduce me to your friends. Guns make me nervous.
This aging reprobate is Alexander Storm. Long-time rebel, adventurer, and gadfly by appointment. Hero of the rebellion, professional clothes horse, and a general pain in the arse. We only put up with him because he's so good at making the Empire forces look like prats.
Right.
Couldn't have put it better myself.
Alexander Storm stepped out of the elevator and clapped Owen firmly on the shoulder.
I'm an old friend and comrade in arms of Jack Random. I've been semi-retired for a while, you know how it is. But once I heard Jack was back in the thick of things, I knew I had to join him. It'll be just like old times, fighting shoulder to shoulder again. I haven't seen the dear fellow since Cold Rock. Not one of our better showings, I'm afraid. Still, it's the thought that counts. Anyway, I contacted the Underground, pulled a few strings, and here I am. The Stevie Blues will represent the clones and espers, and I shall speak for the other parts of the Underground. Delighted to meet you at last, Deathstalker. Word of your exploits has spread far and wide. Everyone in the Rebellion is delighted to see you following in your father's footsteps. He'd be so proud of you. But then Deathstalker has always been an honorable name. Great things are expected of you, my boy. You are the hope of humanity.
Owen became aware of a dangerously quiet, fuming figure at his side. This is Hazel Dark. I'm sure you've heard of her, too. Storm smiled at her dazzlingly.
Of course. The Rebellion can always use another canny fighter. Tell me, Owen, how is Jack Random these days? Last I'd heard, he'd taken a hell of a beating at the Empire's hands.
He's better than he was. Try not to look too shocked when you see him. He's been through a lot.
Are we going to stand around here chatting all day, or is someone going to check whether the program's finished running yet?
The barricade filling the top of the stairs shifted suddenly as someone underneath it tried to move it, but it just settled itself more comfortably. And then an energy beam tore right through the massive equipment, scattering fragments of molten metal in the air. The rebels ducked back and covered their heads with their arms. The security forces began dismantling what was left of the barricade. Let's save the official getting to know each other session for a better time. I'll check the program. You shoot at anything that moves till I get back. He sprinted down the corridor and into the computer room, and saw with relief that the program disks had finished their task and ejected themselves. He grabbed them, pressed the attached self-destruct, and watched with satisfaction as the disks were consumed in smoke and flames. He wrinkled his nose at the smell and dropped the burning disks to the floor. Now, even if he or any of the rebels were to be captured, there would still be no way the Empire could reconstruct what the program had been. He ran back to the stairwell where Hazel was spraying the disappearing barricade with bullets, to no obvious effect. Time to go. The program's taken care of, and we have more than outstayed our welcome. Grab anything that's yours or might be useful and head for the roof. There are gravity sleds waiting there.
We can use the elevator. The cyber rats have control of it.
We'll use the stairs. The cyber rats' commands could get overridden, and it'd be a damn silly way to get trapped.
Hazel headed for the stairs without looking back to see if the others were following. Storm raised an eyebrow at Owen, as though surprised he wasn't taking charge. He was the hope of humanity, after all. Owen shrugged sheepishly and hurried after Hazel. Storm and the Stevie Blues followed behind. Owen kept his gun trained ahead of him, just in case, but there was no one lying in wait on the stairs, and they reached the top floor without incident. The gravity sleds were waiting where they'd been left, for which Owen was very grateful. This would not be a good time to have to walk home. Hazel was already aboard her sled and powering it up. Owen took Storm on his sled, while the three clones insisted upon crowding onto Hazel's. The two sleds rose into the air and headed for the shattered windows they'd originally entered by. Energy beams stabbed the air around them as Dram and his people burst into the top floor, firing wildly. Owen and Hazel pushed the gravity sleds to full speed and shot away between the pastel towers, dodging and diving erratically to throw off the guard's aim. The sleds had force shields, but the power needed to sustain them would quickly drain the sleds' energy crystals, of power they needed more urgently for speed. The Stevie Blues hung on grimly to the bucking gravity sled and fired back at their attackers. More guards appeared at the windows of other towers and opened fire on the sled. Graham must have got the word out. Owen and Hazel darted in and out of the towers, fighting updrafts and dodging unexpected protrusions, and the energy beams came at them from every side. A disruptor beam hit the front of Owen's sled, a glancing blow, blasting it off course. White-hot metal spattered across his hastily flung-up cloak as he struggled to regain control. The cloak burst into flames. Storm pulled it free from Owen's shoulders and threw it overboard. It fell away, burning brightly, finally disappearing into the long drop. Owen fought the sled back under control, but its speed had dropped by half. Hazel dropped back to keep pace with him. Owen gestured for her to go on, but she shook her head stubbornly. Owen activated his comm implant. Hazel, will you please get the hell out of here? Dram will be putting sleds into the air any time now.
Exactly. You're going to need someone to watch your back. We can't let you die. You're the hope of humanity, remember?
He would have argued more, but they whipped around the side of a tower to find themselves facing rows of armed guards waiting for them on top of the next tower. Owen and Hazel cursed simultaneously and threw the sleds into a dive. Energy beam slashed past them, and one hit Stevie 2 squarely in the back. The force of the blast threw her over the side of the sled. The other two Stevies screamed in unison as the burning body plummeted toward the distant ground. Owen sent his sled plunging after her, pushing its speed well past its recommended safety limits. The engine whined protestingly, but he ignored it. He overtook the falling body, swept the sled underneath, and then surged up to catch her. The burning body slammed onto the deck. Storm wrapped his cloak around her to smother the flames. Red warning lights glared all across the sled's controls, and Owen snarled back at them. He'd saved a life from the Empire's venom, and that was all that mattered. Hazel's sled swept in beside him. Stevies 1 and 3 were firing Hazel's projectile weapons at the guards, driving them back under cover. Hazel gestured back over her shoulder, and Owen glanced back briefly. Imperial gravity sleds were coming up behind and closing the gap fast. Energy beams flashed past the rebel sleds from behind and ahead. Warning shots fired to show they'd got the range. Owen caught Hazel's eye and pointed upwards. She nodded, and the two sleds darted straight up, leaving the sheltering towers behind. Owen activated his comm unit again.
This is Rebel 1 to Golden Boy. I can't come to you, so you'll have to come to me. Lock onto my signal and get your ass here fast.
There was no answer, but he hadn't expected one. The two Stevie Blues were firing down at the pursuing Empire sleds, tears for their fallen sister streaming down their cold, set faces. Their guns ran out of ammo, and the Espers dropped the projectile weapons to the deck and grabbed two more from Hazel's belt. They opened up again, and one of the pursuing sleds suddenly erupted into flames and fell spiraling between the towers like a burning leaf. Owen and Hazel sent their sleds whipping back and forth over the towers, their maze-amplified speed and reflexes enabling them to make decisions and pull off evasions their pursuers couldn't hope to match. But still, the Empire sleds came on, remorselessly closing the gap with their superior speed. And then the great golden ship of the Haydenmen appeared out of nowhere right before them as it dropped its cloaking shields, filling the sky, gleaming brighter than the sun. The pursuing sleds took one look and did everything but throw themselves into reverse. A few fired off useless shots at the huge ship, but most just settled for shuddering to an unruly halt in midair. Owen glanced back over his shoulder and saw Storm looking up at the ship with his mouth open. Even the Stevie Blues had stopped firing at their pursuers. Owen grinned and flew up into the open cargo bay doors in the ship's belly, Hazel right behind him.
Get the hell out of here right now! Go, go, go!
The belly door slammed shut, and Owen and Hazel landed their sleds. Owen slumped over the controls, exhausted, but made himself turn around as Stevie 1 and Stevie 3 ran over to the sled. Storm was bending over the unmoving body of Stevie 2. He looked up as the Esper clones reached him and shook his head sadly.
I'm sorry. She must have been dead from the moment the beam hit her.
Owen wanted to say something, but couldn't. Stevie 1 nodded stiffly to him.
You risked your life to save her, even though she was just a clone. It's not your fault she didn't make it. We'll never forget what you did, Owen Deathstalker. Wherever you lead, we'll follow. But now, there are only two of us.
Stevie 1 put her arms around Stevie 3 and hugged her hard. After a while, she let go, and the two Stevie Blues walked off away to be by themselves for a while. Hazel came over to join Owen and Storm.
Nice flying, Deathstalker. Maybe you are the hope of humanity after all.
You're never going to let me forget that, are you?
Listen, Aristo, you need me to keep you honest. If you're the hope, we are in deep shit. Hey, Haydenmen! Any chance of showing us what's happening outside?
A view screen appeared, hovering on the air before them. The planet was falling away below them, but a dozen star cruisers were coming after them. They were unusually large, bulky ships, of a kind Owen didn't recognize. He looked at Storm, who was biting his lower lip and frowning.
The Empress's new fleet, E-Class, all with the new star drive. Reputedly even faster than the legendary Haydenman ships. It would appear we're about to find out whether that's the case.
The Empire ships opened fire. Disruptor cannon fired in sequence, one after the other, so that the star cruisers could maintain a constant fire. The Golden ship fired back, but the Empire ships were rapidly closing the gap. Owen assumed the Haydenmen's shields were still holding, on the grounds everyone on board would have been breathing vacuum by now if they weren't. And then the ship's engines roared, and the view screen disappeared as the Haydenmen craft dropped into hyperspace and was gone. Owen let out a long, slow sigh of relief, and Hazel slapped him on the back.
Told you we'd make it, Aristo. Personally, I was never worried. Not for a minute.
And you should have been. If those new ships are typical of the E-Class, we are all in real trouble. Think of a fleet of ships as fast as my old Sunstrider. We'd been relying on the Haydenmen ships to give us an edge, but it would appear they're not number one anymore. Which means, if we're going to go head-to-head with the Empire, we've got to have ships with the new star drive, too.
What the hell? We can worry about that later. The mission was a success! The tax and tithe computers are toast, and we got most of the contacts out alive.
We still lost one.
It wasn't your fault. You tried. These things happen. I'll go and have a word with Stevie 1 and 3. Offer them some comfort. and a friendly shoulder to lean on.
He bowed formally and moved away. Hazel watched him go.
These things happen. He's going to be a real comfort, he is.
I think we could both use a drink and some rest. Perhaps you'd care to join me, Hazel. Well, we could have a meal together. Would you like that?
Not really, no. No offense, Deathstalker, but let's keep our relationship professional, okay?
She smiled at him briefly, then strode over to Storm and the two Esper clones, gesturing for them to follow her. Owen watched them go. He was sure he must have been turned down faster than that at some time in his past, but he was damned if he could think when. Things like that weren't supposed to happen. He was a lord, after all. And the hope of humanity.
Nice try, though,
said the AI Ozymandias through his comm implant. Shut up, Oz. You're dead. Up to Gehenna, and down to Golgotha. Captain John Silence of the Empire Star Cruiser Dauntless was going home to die, and was trying hard not to give a damn. After all, he'd only failed in his mission and got most of his people killed. He looked at the brimming glass in his hand and pulled a face. The trouble with sustained heavy drinking was that after a while your tongue went numb and you couldn't tell what you were drinking. Though given exactly what he was pouring down his throat in great quantity, that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. The food synthesizers could produce alcohol and flavorings, but the combinations, like the quality, were strictly limited. It was supposed to be red wine, but all the red part did was turn his teeth pink. Still, for a wine whose vintage was under 10 minutes, it wasn't that bad. Not that it made any difference. He would have drunk it anyway. His head hurt, his hands were shaking, and his stomach lurched this way and that when he moved. He'd been drinking steadily for almost 3 days now, taking time out to eat and sleep when he absolutely had to. He didn't drink much normally, and he was finding getting drunk and staying drunk harder work than he'd expected. But he kept at it, nothing else to do. He was a failure, going home to report that failure to an empress who'd kill him for it. And all those good men lost. He was heading back to Golgotha with bad news and worse, and while the Empress Lionstone might have pardoned him once for screwing up, she wouldn't put up with it a second time. He'd been sent to the Wolfling world on a straightforward mission, accompanied by a contingent of trained, adjusted men, the Wampir, and the Empress's lover and right-hand man, the Lord High Dram. He'd been commanded to arrest and execute that most renowned traitor, Owen Deathstalker, and all with him, and then returned to Golgotha with the rebels' heads and the secrets of the legendary Wolfling world. They'd even given him the single Grendel alien ever to be subdued and controlled, an extraordinary and so far unique specimen. The mission should have been a walkover. Instead, Dram's body was down in the cargo hold, the Grendel alien had been killed, which was supposed to be impossible, and the three Wampir who hadn't died fighting the rebels had been detained by the newly risen Hayden men. Silence didn't want to think what for. He took another drink. The Hayden men. Once the enemies of humanity. Defeated long ago in a fierce and bloody war, they were supposed to be extinct, or at best sleeping endlessly in the hidden tomb of the Hayden men. But Owen Deathstalker had found and woken them, and now they sided with the rebels. And God help the Empire. The walls were falling, and the wolves were running loose among the flock. He downed another drink, and another. He really wasn't looking forward to explaining to the Empress that the Wolfling world was, in fact, also Hayden, home of the Hayden men, which meant the rebels now had access to the legendary laboratories of Hayden, and all the wonders and horrors they had produced in the past. Science beyond reason, weapons beyond hope of stopping, and all of it aimed at the Empire. By his failure, he'd signed the death warrant of civilization, and quite possibly all of humanity as well. No, he had nothing but bad news to lay before his empress, and she would kill him for it. If his own men didn't do it first. All the men he'd taken down into the caverns deep below the frozen surface of the Wolfling world had died there, facing weapons and horrors they could not have anticipated. And instead of avenging them, Silence had been forced to take his ship and run. His crew didn't understand what he'd seen down there. Why it was vital he abandon everything and flee, to be sure the Empire would get advance warning of the threats to come. So now his crew despised him. If the investigator Frost hadn't stood by him and made it very clear that she would personally avenge him if he died, he wouldn't have had to worry about facing Lionstone. There would have been a sudden, regrettable accident, and it would all have been over. Which might have been kinder, really, but you couldn't expect an investigator to understand that. They were trained from childhood to hunt and kill aliens, and the subtleties of human behavior often escape them. So he left the running of what used to be his ship to his second-in-command, and sat alone in his cabin, drinking. To pass the time as much as anything else. There was a knock at his door, and he looked up, just a little blearily. He knew who it was, who it had to be. Only one person ever came to see him these days. He thought about getting up to open the door himself, but decided against it. He didn't trust his legs that much. So he worked his numbed tongue around his slightly slack mouth and said, "Door. Open." With as much authority and clarity as he could manage. The door slid open, and Investigator Frost stepped into his cabin. She nodded to Silence, and looked unhurriedly about her as the door closed behind her. Silence didn't look. He knew the place was a mess. He'd never been particularly tidy, but normally his Batman took care of things like that. He hadn't seen his Batman in 5 days, and he found it faintly surprising just how bad things could get in 5 days, when you didn't give a damn anymore. He did sneak a quick look at himself in the mirror on the wall opposite, and winced. A tall, lean man in his late 40s looked back at him, with a pale-lined face that could use a shave, topped by a distinctly receding hairline. He looked rumpled and badly used, like the unmade bed he was sitting on. His uniform was a disgrace. The investigator, on the other hand, looked utterly immaculate in a tight, starched uniform with brightly polished buttons, as though she was just about to step out onto a parade ground. She was tall, muscular, in her late 20s, though her eyes were much older. They were cold and blue, burning fiercely in a pale, controlled face, topped by auburn hair cropped close to the skull. She wore a gun on her hip, despite shipboard regulations, and a long sword hung down her back. Just standing there at her ease, she looked ready and willing to take on a fair-sized army all by herself. And it was a brave man who would have bet on the army. She was handsome rather than pretty, and it was a brave man indeed who'd even smile at her without a direct invitation. In advance, in writing. Frost smiled only when she was killing something. She pulled up a chair, removed and discarded a dirty shirt with thumb and forefinger, and sat down facing Silence. He raised an eyebrow. Frost was usually impeccably formal, even in private. "What are you doing here, Investigator?" Silence was pleased his voice was still steady, if a little slurred.
"I thought we'd agreed you were going to stop drinking."
"You agreed. I just got tired of arguing."
"It won't help, Captain."
"It can't hurt, either. Things are already as bad as they can get."
"There's always the chance they might improve, unexpectedly. We have to keep our wits about us, Captain. Be ready to take advantage of any opportunities that might arise."
"You take advantage, Investigator. I'm too tired. And I really don't care that much anymore. No matter what happens, our mission is still a mess. Civilization is doomed, and my men are still dead. They were good men. They followed me into the Madness Maze because I ordered them to. Because I told them it was safe. And not content with that, I ended up sending the survivors head-to-head with Hayden men. It would have been kinder to shoot them all in the back. Except that's what I did, really." He sighed as the familiar guilt and pain washed over him again. He'd lost men before, but never like this. Failed before, but never like this. "Now, if you'll excuse me, Investigator, I have some serious drinking to attend to. He looked down at his glass to give her a chance to leave with dignity, but when he looked up again, she was still there, staring at him coldly.
I can feel your distress, no matter where I am. Ever since our experiences on the ghost world on Sealy, you and I have been linked in some strange way. Not quite telepathy, but close. I chose to disregard it, as did you. We didn't want to be taken for espers. But then we entered the madness maze on the Wolfling world, and the link has become stronger, unavoidable. If I concentrate, I can feel what you're feeling, sense what you're thinking. And sometimes, it comes whether I concentrate or not. It's really very annoying. For an Imperial officer, your mind is extremely disorganized. Your feelings are as undisciplined as your thoughts. And my mouth is currently full of the taste of whatever garbage that is you're drinking.
I can't feel you. But then I wouldn't, would I? You're an investigator. You don't have any feelings.
My mind is disciplined, unlike yours. Is that why you're trying so hard to climb into a bottle and drown?
Silence glared at her.
In case it has escaped your attention, investigator, the Dauntless is carrying us back to inform the Empress that not only was our mission shot to hell, not only is her lover and warrior Prime dead and cold, but also a major rebellion complete with an army of reawakened augmented men is in the offing. She is not going to be pleased with us. Not at all. If we're lucky, she'll just kill us both on the spot. But we haven't been particularly lucky so far, have we, investigator?
So why are we going back?
The words hung in the air between them, refusing to let silence ignore them. He looked into his glass, but it had no answer for him. He sighed heavily and made himself meet the investigator's cold blue eyes. Because it's my duty. I may have screwed up everything else in my life, but I still know my duty. The Empress must be warned. I swore an oath upon my honor to serve and protect the Empire to the last drop of my blood. And I still believe in that, irrespective of whoever happens to be sitting on the Iron Throne. The Empire is worth preserving for all its many faults. All the alternatives are worse, from barbarism and mass starvation on 1,000 worlds if the system breaks down, to all kinds of petty dictatorships if the Empress's authority is broken. The rebellion is a threat to civilization itself. I don't want to think of what might happen if those damned AIs on Shub seized the opportunity to attack while we were preoccupied with a rebellion. Now what about the aliens? You saw that thing on Unseelie with its half-living ship? Limestone must be warned and made to understand the urgency of the threat. She won't want to believe me, so she'll order a mind probe and she'll believe that, whether she wants to or not.